afternoon and welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. My name is Roger Metz, and you are listening to 94.5 WGTK, The Answer in Greenville, South Carolina. You're listening to me. I'm not actually here today. It is the, as we talked last week, you heard Taylor talking about the NASP archery season coming up. I'm actually at a tournament this afternoon with her, watching her send a few arrows downrange, and hopefully she's hopefully she's having a good time. It's she's very competitive. I mean, if you listened last week, you kind of got that sense of the competitiveness just between she and I, because we're so much alike. And when she goes to one of these tournaments, she is very competitive. And you just have to – the biggest thing is to getting her to just calm down and relax, have fun with it, enjoy being there, enjoy doing what she's doing and not – and she said it herself. And this is one thing she's really matured over the last few years. Because you heard her, if you listened last week, you heard her talk about, you know, the arrow you just shot doesn't affect the next arrow you're going to shoot. That they're separate entities. And I can remember when she was younger shooting the NASP tournaments, you know, she would have a bad arrow. And it just got her. I mean, she just lost it, and the next arrow was worse, and then it got worse from there. And I can remember, and I don't think she'll mind me telling this story, but I remember one of her first tournaments when she was like 11. When she first started shooting, I mean, she left the tournament just in tears because she had an arrow that just missed the target. And granted, you know, she's first few months of shooting it, and there were a few missed targets. There were a few arrows that hit the target and bounced off, and I can remember her arrows would hit the target, and it kind of lay over on its side because, you know, she was new to shooting. She's probably shooting 8 or 9 pounds on the bow, and it would just hit the target, and it barely penetrated the paper, and it just lay over. Not anymore. When she hits that target, it sticks. So I'm at an archery competition this afternoon. A fun in-house thing, but we got a good show. We're going to talk about a lot of things going on in the outdoors here in South Carolina, and then we're going to go out. I went to the Strike King Riders Conference about a month or so ago. I guess I was there when the hurricane came through town because I left a day early to come home, and I had the opportunity. We heard Keith Combs, the interview I did with him out on the water, and I got to sit in with Jonathan Van Dam. And Jonathan is Kevin Van Dam's nephew, lives right there in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and we got a chance to go out on the water, fish a little bit, talk a little bit, got to know him. I'd really never met him before, and I think that's the real fun aspect of some of these writers' conferences is besides the food and the free stuff. Speaking of free stuff, a lot of that stuff I got, Strike King, yeah, we're going to start that in middle of this month. We're going to start giving that stuff away. I've got a lot of fishing tackle and rod and reels. It's starting to roll in. The Christmas stuff's starting to roll in. So we're going to, but that's you guys are going to benefit from me going to those conferences. But one of the things is getting to know people that you normally don't know. I mean, you know, I've seen Jonathan on the elite schedule. By the way, he's another angler that's going over to the MLF side this year. And just got a chance to talk to him out on the boat for a couple of hours. And yeah, we got a really good story on deer hunting. So you have to wait till the third segment to get that story. Actually, the end of the third segment. That's a good one. And, you know, with deer hunting, there's always a story. And Jonathan's a good kid, young guy. And so you'll get to hear his interview and enjoy that. And then we got a bunch of other stuff we're going to talk about. But, hey, I spent 2 days this week down in the low country. Well, I spent a day on the road traveling. And then I spent a day out on the water shooting pictures. Just a different, not a fishing tournament, but actual for a YouTube video that Brian Latimer's doing. His channel, Straight Up Fishing, I think is what it is. I think it debuts today or tomorrow, November the 4th. So tomorrow it debuts Straight Up Fishing on YouTube with Brian Latimer. I'm not sure what the first one is, but this was a saltwater one, redfish and trout. Had a great time doing it. Shot, I don't know, 700-800 pictures over the day, and it was kind of a different experience. It was kind of fun. And the thing that kills me is you don't get to fish. You know, you're watching everybody else fish and catch fish, and you don't get to do any of that. It's kind of tough to sit there. I mean, the guys getting paid to do it is one thing, but when you're sitting there being paid to take pictures and you just really want to fish. So anyway, that was my week, most of my week. And but here's the crowning achievement of the week is Carolina Seafood was out of shrimp when I called them Monday. Their boats were leaving to go out that day, and they weren't going to be back till Tuesday, I think. So I was out of luck there. I called Livingston's, and a guy named Johnny answered the phone. He put me on hold. Hold was putting the phone down while he talked to somebody else for a few minutes. And but they were getting shrimp off the boat that morning fresh. Got a chance to get up there, and guy got 50 pounds of the best. Oh, I don't know. Those things are probably 7 or 8 inches long. Had to buy 50 pounds, spread it around a little bit, and got a bunch put in the freezer for us to enjoy over the wintertime. And South Carolina goodness, right out of the ocean. I can't wait to fix some of them. So that was the crowning achievement of the whole thing. The Latimer thing was fun, don't get me wrong, but boy, those shrimp are going to eat well all winter long. So if you're down that way, I encourage you to go out and get some for yourself. They're good. Hey, and there's a Saltwater Cowboys in Charleston now. Go figure. That was a place we used to go eat in St. Augustine, Florida. But now there's one on Shem Creek in Charleston, and shrimp and grits were pretty good. I will admit, it was different. It's barbecue shrimp and grits. So you had a little barbecue zing into the sauce and all. It was good. Let's see. Normally, I don't get into politics here. I stay away from it. But if you live in North Carolina, the upcoming election, I guess Tuesday, you have a chance to vote for the right to hunt, fish, and harvest wildlife. We here in South Carolina already have this, but North Carolina's got it on the ballot this year. It protects the North Carolina sporting traditions for future generations by protecting the right to hunt, fish, and harvest wildlife in perpetuity. Ensures that hunting and fishing continue to be the preferred means of wildlife management. Codifies the public trust doctrine, a key tenet of the North American model of wildlife conservation. If you've listened to this show, you know all about that one. Ensures that conservation is based on sound science. Supports conservation funding system that has generated $1.23 billion for North Carolina. Does not affect the ability of the Wildlife Resources Commission or Division of Marine Fisheries to regulate hunting or fishing, which is, you know, seasons, bag limits, et cetera, et cetera. 21 states, including every state adjacent to North Carolina, currently have the right to hunt and fish in their constitution. So if you are in North Carolina or you know somebody in North Carolina likes to hunt, fish, you need to get them to vote yes. I mean, it is all through the ages, it has been our, there's a controversy. Is it a privilege or a right? It's a privilege in that you have to get a license, but I think historically it's a right. That's kind of hard to make those two kind of mesh, but I think they do. So this is an opportunity for you in North Carolina to put this in your state constitution that, yes, we have the right to hunt, fish, and harvest wildlife. And these are the thing it's, and these are the tenants you can go to. So that was a little press release from the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation. Timely for North Carolina. So like I said, if you're up there, let's see what else is here. Child bitten by reported coyote in school playground. And that really stinks because I had gone through and made a list in every state except for, of course, Hawaii and maybe Alaska or something, of the reported sightings of the first coyotes in the state, and I can't find it. I was in here going through my stuff, and I'm like, I spent time getting this together, and I've carried it around for like 6 months, and now I need it and don't have it. So forgive me. I guess I'll have to go back and do all that again. But, you know, hey, I've got nothing but time on my hands, so, you know, I'm sure I can find another hour or two to sink into that one. But it was amazing because it contradicts a lot of what people saying about how coyotes got here. You know, they weren't imported by DNR. They migrated. And if you look at the migration patterns and the dates, it kind of fits. So, but yeah, I'll have to go back through and do that again somewhere else. Anyway, hang on through the break. Going to come back, talk about a few stories, listen to Jonathan Van Am in the third segment. And then in the final one, we're going to have the calendar of events for this week. So hang on for more Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side of the break. And welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Boy, I tell you, if you're a deer hunter and you look at the forecast for this week, it's all good from end to end. I hope to get out there a little bit. I had just way too much going on, but it's all good. I get out there and, you know, hey, I've still got one in the freezer from last year that we're just now starting to put in the spaghetti and chili. So, you know, I at least need one more. I might have to hunt really hard at the end of the year if I don't find one soon. Maybe this week I'll get out there. If you haven't noticed, it is fall and it is deer season. And we are currently probably in the pre-rut here in South Carolina. Maybe a little bit of actual rutting going on. Like I said, the weather this week in the 40s and 60s, it could probably spur a little bit and get things moving. Traditionally, I've always done my best deer hunting the last week in October. In fact, Neil Paul was, he called me the other day and he goes, "Hey, do you realize what we were doing a year ago today?" I was like, "No." But we had been, we went over to the farm and spent the night because we had to be at Riley's Cup, the high school bass fishing tournament that night to do a presentation. And he said, "Dude, we were in Chester and you killed that deer." And I had him up in a, I couldn't find the deer in the tall weeds and grass. So I had him in the back of the gator on a chair, sitting up there like Grandpa Clampett and looking for that deer. That was fun. But yeah, so maybe lightning will strike a week later this year and I'll find another nice one. But when it comes down to it, all I want is about 50 or 60 pounds of meat in the freezer. From every time I pull the trigger, that's what it's all about for me. That and just being outdoors. That's probably the biggest part of it. But yeah, with fall and with the rut coming in, if you haven't noticed, there are a lot of dead deer on the side of the roads in South Carolina. I drove from here to Merle's Inlet and back again. And yeah, there are a lot of deer. And in fact, I even saw a dead pig on the side of the road. It was a big pig. I mean, it was not your average little 150. This probably was 300 pound pig. I really couldn't. I went by him, and it took me a second to notice him, but I couldn't. It was like he was propped up on his front legs, kind of like a dog just sitting there, and his head was down. But he was right on the side of the road. I'm sure an ordinary pig wouldn't be laying there, so he's probably dead. He was a big one. It was a big one. But anyway, from DNR, drivers should watch for deer on state roads. Charles Ruth writes this every year. Motorists throughout the state need to be constantly aware of roaming whitetail deer. It's the DNR is not going to compensate motorists for injuries or damages resulting from deer collisions. So safe driving is the key. There were 2,400 deer vehicle collisions in 2016. I don't guess statistics are in for 2017. Similar to figures from the last few years, they're lower than the late 90s. Because our population, the deer population, was way up in the late 90s, early 2000s. The decline may have more to do with changes in reporting criteria or lack of reporting for minor damages than with an actual reduction in collisions. Although deer vehicle collisions are an issue in South Carolina, the state is a much better position than most states, particularly states in the Northeast and Upper Midwest. Many states have 30 to 50,000 deer vehicle collisions annually. Wow. So, you know, if you see something in the road and almost hit one Tuesday night late, in fact, slamming on brakes and swerving to avoid the deer, turned the 72-quart cooler full of shrimp over in the back of my car. Luckily, I duct taped the lid down, but my car smells almost like the inside of a shrimp boat right now. And vinegar and everything else helps for a little bit, but I got to do something. I might have to rip the carpet out of my car to get that smell out. So when you see one, of course, slow down. You can beep the horns to get them to move. Flick of the headlights if no oncoming traffic is present. Of course, reduce speed. Don't try to swerve to avoid them, because a lot of what times you'll happen is you'll swerve, you'll lose control, go off one side of the road, overcorrect, and come back across the road. So, you know, yeah, you don't want to hit it, but, man, be careful about how you try to avoid a deer, because you can injure yourself more than just the car if you had to hit one. Had somebody ask me, how do you get those deer to cross at those deer crossing signs? Well, we have a very good education program here in South Carolina for our deer, and they know exactly where to cross the road. That's, you know, joking if you didn't catch that. But if you see the crossing signs, that just means there's an above average of deer sightings in those areas because of like the habitat around or funnels and that sort of thing. So beware when you see that sign. That's a warning that there are deer in the area. But of course, these days you can run across a deer pretty much anywhere in South Carolina, even downtown Columbia, I think. So, peak times, October, November, most occur sun up, sundown, because that's traditionally, that's where deer, move. And that's when you're commuting, especially when the time changes tomorrow, tonight. That's when you're going to be on the road more often. So be careful. And speaking of deer movement, let me see. Here it is. Here we go. I like this one. The Quality Deer Management Association. Does the moon affect when deer are most active? There's a whole following of the solunar charts and timetables and the peak activity. And look, my theory on deer hunting is you go when you have time. And some of us at work have, you know, that's what you have to do. You go when you have time. But it says not likely. Deer research studies using GPS collars have repeatedly shown that deer are most active at dawn and dusk, regardless of moon phase or other outside factors. And there's a graphic on this that I can't show you on the radio, but it's from a Quality Whitetail Magazine article by a Penn State researcher tracking the movements of 30 does on public hunting land in Pennsylvania during October 2015 and 2016. Differences across moon phase were negligible. The take-home message: don't worry about the moon phase when deciding whether or not to hunt. Deer will be most active at dawn and dusk regardless. So, if that helps you out, maybe, maybe not. We'll see. Okay. This one's fun. Natural medicine. More doctors prescribing time outdoors. And this is not in the United States. This is actually in the United Kingdom. Bird watch for long-tailed duck. Search for shells. Sketch some snowdrops. Snowdrops. That's just snowflakes. Well, I don't know who the editor on this one was. This is what from EcoWatch. Olivia Rosan from October 22nd. These are some of the prescriptions you might receive if you go to a doctor in the Shetland Islands of Scotland and say that you're suffering from, here you go, stress, heart disease, diabetes, mental health problems, or other chronic conditions. Starting October 5th, the UK's National Health Service in Shetland has authorized doctors there to prescribe time outdoors. Doctors will pass out pamphlets written by the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds, okay, advising patients on walks to take and wildlife to watch out for. The Shetland doctors are only the latest in a growing number of healthcare providers incorporating nature into their treatment plans as evidence mounts for the health benefits of time spent in wild places. In his 2005 book, Last Child in the Woods, Richard Louv, which I had like his top 10 sayings from that book here at one time, and I may go back and find it because he had some great ones, cited 60 studies finding that time outside helped mental and physical health and that too much time spent away from nature caused harm. Now the website of His Children and Nature Network lists more than 700, Louv told the Natural New York Times. Whoop. That doesn't sound right. Lists more than 700. Oh, well. It all printed, trust me. One doctor who was inspired by Louv's book was Dr. Robert Zara, a Washington, D.C. pediatrician who started a nonprofit called Parks RX America to make it easier for doctors to prescribe time in nature. The site has mapped and rated parks in the D.C. area and allows doctors to find parks near patients' homes. Dr. Zarr told the New York Times he usually writes one or two park prescriptions per day, usually for children dealing with weight issues or teenagers dealing with mental health problems. Zarr said he lets his patients take the lead in planning activities. Is there anything they want to do that's enjoyable outside that they're willing to commit to? You just told me you play soccer. How often do you need to go? Would you be willing to commit to going once a week or twice a week? Across the country in San Francisco, Dr. Daphne Miller wrote that she has success with prescriptions like, let's see. Gosh, why does this thing seem like it's all jumbled up? Let's see. What I've noticed in my practice mirrors that what has been observed in the studies. Inactive patients who initiate a new exercise regimen outdoors are more likely to stick with it than those who join a gym or work out in the coolness in the confines of their basement. It seems that a number of things contribute to this stickiness. the constant varying scenery, the camaraderie of the trail, the fact that monthly dues and expensive spandex outfits aren't required. And consistent with the research findings, my patients report a host of other benefits from their routine, nature routine. Less fatigue throughout the day, a sense of calm, better sleep, a drop in weight, and even lower blood pressure. Of course, not every patient takes the nature prescription and runs with it, but for many, a physician's advice backed by a paper document is just a push needed to venture into the trails. So it's been, they go on to say it's been researched in Japan back in the 80s, some Guardian articles, how trees can help you find health and happiness. And then they give just a little, says, try this out the next time you find yourself stressed out near some green space. First, find a spot. Make sure you have left your phone and camera behind. I say I disagree with the second. You can leave the phone, but take the camera. You are going to be walking aimlessly and slowly. You don't need any devices. Let your body be your guide. Listen to where it wants to take you. Follow your nose and take your time. Doesn't matter if you don't get anywhere. You're not going anywhere. You're savoring the sounds, smells, and sights of nature and letting the forest in. The key to unlocking the power of the forest is in the five senses. Let nature enter through your ears, eyes, nose, mouth, hands, and feet. Listen to the birds singing and breeze rustling in the leaves of the trees, which was really cool. When I was in Catalina, it had the breeze going and the elk out there. It added a lot. Look at the different greens of the trees, sunlight filtering through the branches. Smell the fragrance of the forest and breathe in the natural aromatherapy of phytoncides. Taste the freshness of the air as you take deep breaths. Place your hands on the trunk of a tree. Dip your fingers or toes in a stream, lie on the ground, drink in the flavor of the forest, and release your sense of joy and calm. This is your sixth sense, a state of mind. Now you have connected with nature. You have crossed the bridge to happiness. I agree wholehearted with a lot of that. And be interested to see if anybody has ever taken a prescription for the outdoors before. Eco Watch, Olivia Roseanne, October 22nd, good article. And that's all you need to know. Just get out there. You don't have to have a doctor tell you to do that. You can do it on your own. All right. Hang on through the break. You're going to listen to me talk to Jonathan Van Dam up at Kentucky Lake after the break. All right. Having a great time at the Strike King Riders Conference here on Kentucky Lake. And, you know, one of my best friends from school is Kevin Davis, Manistique, Michigan. You know, for a Yankee like that and a Southern boy like me to get along, you know, there's some common ground. And I've run into another one with a lot of common ground. That's Jonathan Van Dam. Man, I've had a good time talking to you and getting to know you a little better.
Yeah, man, I had a great time today. We've, caught a few fish and, you know, gorgeous weather down here to escape for me. It's starting to get cold at home, so... You know, to escape and come down to where it's 85 and I'm wearing shorts, and, you know, that's not a bad thing.
It's, and the rest of us are wanting, like, 75. We're tighter than that. Right. Here. You know, a lot of stuff going on professional bass fishing. You decided to go to MLF, and we talked a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. Explain to people the draw for you to fish MLF.
For me, the biggest thing with MLF is, it was a really hard decision, you know, because I have all the respect in the world for bass and the platform that they've given us and the level that they've raised our sport to. You know, I mean, I've wanted a bass fish my whole life. And, to be able to, at, 30 years old, to, fish for a living and support my family, you know, that way, it really is a dream come true for me. So, but the MLF is... It's just brought a whole new excitement to our sport. It's brought a lot of people that really don't know bass fishing as a sport, you know, as spectators. And they got a lot of really good opportunities to grow the sport for the future, to grow the sport for, television-wise and media-wise. So that's the big thing. And then number one thing, that went into it was just, the decision that I feel like the future of the sport is and what's going to grow the sport the most. You know, as anglers, all we want to do is, whenever it is our time is to leave the sport, is just to leave it better than it was when we got there. So that's kind of the goal, and I feel like, you know, Major League Fishing has that vision for, you know, future growth and for growing the overall numbers and the overall participation and you know, notoriety of our sport.
You know, your uncle is well-known, Kevin, and you come from a fishing family and a family with a lot of accountants. We'll have to throw that in there, too. And I think Jonathan and I have figured out that it might be like a character defect, maybe the gene defect or something, have so many members of our families of accountants. But he's grown up in the industry, hunting and fishing. Just as nice a guy as you could want to be in the boat with. But, you know, we were talking earlier. It's not just fishing for you.
No.
I mean, it is the outdoors as a whole.
It is, for sure. You know, I'm an avid outdoorsman, I guess you could say. You know, I grew up working in my family's business. We own a sporting goods store in Kalamazoo. It's called DNR Sports Center. And you know, we've been there for, 32 years or something that we've been in business. And, you know, growing up there, you know, we have a little bit of everything. You know, we're kind of an outdoor superstore. We sell the Tracker and Nitro boats, and we sell pontoons, and we sell the, you know, all the boating accessories, tubes, skis, whatever. We also
have a summertime you can do that in Michigan.
Yeah, okay. We have a small window of summertime there. But, you know, we also have a lot of hunting supplies, archery, and you know, for years I worked as an archery tech at the store. I worked in the gun. I mean, I do a little bit of everything, so I just enjoy it, you know, thoroughly enjoy every aspect of it, whether it's hunting, fishing, you know, whatever it might be. Hunting and fishing are my two passions, obviously.
Hunting, and look, you're on the radio in South Carolina here, and there are a lot of deer hunters in South Carolina. There's a lot of deer hunters in Michigan.
Oh yeah.
We don't have CWD as yet down here.
Mm-hmm.
Now Michigan has a lot. Tell us some of the things that are happening on when you have a big CWD outbreak and it's in the herd. What are some of the things they're doing in Michigan to combat it or to deal with it?
It's been kind of crazy the last few years with the CWD and you know, some of the other diseases and stuff, the blue tongue or you know, EHD. Whatever else. Yeah, EHD. We had that real bad for a while. And what it's done is, you know, Michigan, the DNR has put in, you know, a handful of counties or core CWD observancy areas, I guess you could say. And, you know, they have, you know, mandatory check stations. They have, we've done, you know, limiting and or totally getting rid of baiting, whether it's, you know, corn, apples, mineral, you know, whatever it might be, you know, in certain areas. And actually, going into the next year, it's going to be completely got rid of baiting for the, you know, statewide. As of right now, it's just kind of in those CWD zones. But, you know, going forward, they've already spelled out a plan, and we've already, you know, at the store, we've already received all the information in the packets and stuff that, you know, they're going to, you know, outlaw all of it, you know, going forward here for the next, I'm not sure exactly how many years, but, you know, really just doing that to try to, you know, manage the population and control the CWD as much as possible, you know, and control our deer herd, you know, try to make sure that, you know, the major population isn't affected or wiped out by some of these diseases that can be so devastating. So, you know, I've gone as far as in some areas where you can't use any sort of attractant scents as like a dopey or an estrus or any of that stuff either. So a lot of regulations that are changing the way that we hunt, but as hunters you learn to adapt with them and to make those changes. You know, I myself have you know, started doing food plots and stuff like that, gotten big into that and the QDMA and you know, on our property that we deer hunt back home and you know, stuff like that, you know, we can get behind and you know, we can get with some of these other organizations to really help our deer herd.
coming back to fishing, because we got a deer story we're going to end this conversation with. It's just classic. A lot of us probably can relate, especially if you live on anywhere near where you got a little bit of land and all, and you've got that deer running around, you just won't. 2019.
Yep.
Going to be a cool year for you.
It is.
What's it like going into a year, now 8 years on the Elite, so every year you've known the schedule,
yep,
where you're going to go.
Yeah.
Now going into next year, you're not going to know where you're going.
Well, we'll know where we're going for the
eight,
you know, the Bass Pro Tour events. We will have a schedule for that. But, man, it's going to be a whole new mentality, honestly, and it's going to be a lot of changes. And, you know, it's going to be different than what it's been for the last 8 years. And as an angler, I'm going to have to learn to adapt to that mentally and try to do the best I can. I'm really excited. You know, couldn't be more excited about the opportunity with MLF and what I think that the future holds there.
You got the eight events. Help us out a little bit. The eight regular season events, and then you're going to have four more tournaments,
mm-hmm,
and then a championship. Is that correct? Am I right on that? Or is there a...
There's
four tournaments.
A cup championship and a tour championship. Yep.
And those you won't know.
The cup events you won't know. You know where you're going. You're not allowed to look at any aerial imagery, anything around the area that you're going to for those. But so we have the eight Bass Pro Tour events, and then there's going to be a point system at the end of the year. There's going to be a Bass Pro Tour Championship.
Okay.
And then you got the four cup events, and the way you qualify for the four cup events is the first two Bass Pro Tour events. There'll be a point system there, and the top 30 guys will qualify for the first cup event. And then your points will reset. The next two Bass Pro Tour events in a row, you'll qualify for another cup. You know, and so on, all the way down to eight. So there'll be four cup events that you qualify for based on your performance over two tournaments on the Bass Pro Tour. And those ones are going to be the exact same thing you're used to seeing on Major League Fishing now.
Okay.
So they're going to be, you know, like I said, they tell you where to go. They don't tell you where you're going to fish. They don't tell you nothing. You use the league boats, league jerseys, all that stuff. Whereas in the Bass Pro Tour events, we're using our own boats, our own jerseys, our own sponsors. And then you've got the Bass Pro Tour Championship, which is going to be the top 30 guys for the season in points.
Okay.
For that, and then the cup championship is going to be based off a point system and different qualifications just from those four cup events. So there's a lot of things. It's a little bit hard to follow at times, but you know, I think we got the right mindset anyways.
Smallmouth fishing.
Oh yeah.
You grew up there.
I did.
We didn't.
Yeah, no, you didn't.
We didn't.
Trust me. I got some really good friends, the guys that I room with all year long. You know, I'm sure that everyone's very familiar with, you know, Marty Robinson and Casey Ashley.
Yeah.
Both South Carolina boys. And when I first met those guys, they couldn't catch a smallmouth if it was in a 5-gallon bucket full of them, you know. But
they've
learned a lot. You know, the Elite Series has added a lot of smallmouth tournaments, a lot of Great Lake tournaments. So they've learned a lot over the years. You know, they've come up and spent some time with me in Michigan, and I've taken them out to some of my favorite places over the years, too. So, you know, smallmouth right now are here to stay. You know, it seems like every major tour, the highlight of the season anymore are smallmouth tournaments, whether it was the St. Lawrence River for bass this last year or the last couple of years, or whether it was, you know, this past year Lake St. Clair for the FLW mm-hmm. Tour. I mean, the smallmouth fisheries with the population of the smallmouth, with the gobies, with the zebra mussels and stuff, the Great Lakes are just they're stronger than they've been in a long, long time.
You got somebody from South Carolina mm-hmm. wants to go smallmouth fishing. Where do you tell them to go?
I would say hands down, if you're going to go somewhere, you know, the only two places, the top two places in my mind are Lake St. Clair or Thousand Islands, New York, the St. Lawrence River. Lake St. Clair is probably, for someone coming from South Carolina, would be the easiest. There's a lot of guides and a lot of good friends that I have that guide every day out there. Tremendous population of fish. You know, I mean, they can literally be anywhere on the lake. I mean, you can pretty much just launch the boat, run out to the middle, put the trolling motor down, and start casting. You know
and
what I mean?
Find them.
And you'll run into some. You know, they're not everywhere, but you just mill around and kind of just keep going. And once you find one, there's a bunch more in that area usually.
If they brought their own boat, we talked about two biggest drawbacks that you gotta come to terms with fishing smallmouths up north.
Yeah, number one thing by far is just got to be the waves and the water that you're fishing. You know, these are the bodies of water that these smallmouth live in. You know, and it's not all of them, because there's plenty of lakes in Michigan, Minnesota, New York that are small bodies of water that have great big smallmouth. But if you're going to go fish those great lakes, you're going to have to. You'll get a crash course of driving a boat in big waves, and you got to be prepared for it. So and bass boats are not made for the Great Lakes. You know, they're not. So, you just got to take your time, and, you don't want to go out there jumping waves like you're racing a motocross or anything. You know, you just take your time. You'll get there when you get there. It's better to be there, take an extra 20 minutes and get there safe than it is to try to haul the mail, because, you know, not 99% of the time you're not going to be able to go over 40.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. And then finding them.
Yeah. Finding them is a big thing too. You know, the nice thing about smallmouth is they let you know they're there really quick. You know, they're a very aggressive fish. You know, honestly, when I'm practicing or fishing for a tournament, I'm pulling up to points and shoals and finding rock piles and finding bait. You know, and I'll make five, six casts, and if I don't get bit in 5-6 casts, you might as well just keep on going, because if they're there, they'll let you know really quick.
I'm gonna have to take you up on coming up there one year.
Yeah,
one of those trips. Hey, SciCon, man, we love our deer hunting down here, and you, the more you get outside the state, and there are a lot of good deer hunters out there. I mean, you know a bunch, I know a bunch, and we're from different parts of the country.
Yeah.
But that bond brings us together, and there's always a story.
There is.
There's always a story, and Jonathan's got a great one, so we took about 20 minutes telling this thing before.
Yeah, we'll try to narrow it down.
But it's a good one. Listen to this one, people.
Okay, long story short, basically was I had this deer that the house my wife and I lived in at the time, we had 3.5 or 4 acres, something like that, real small piece of land. I had, you know, an acre a yard, 2 acres of like a CRP grass, and then like an acre of woods, but it was like a perfect little pinch point, funnel point. And I had a camera out there and one tree stand. And I was watching this buck, had him on camera, seen him a couple times in the daytime around the house, and just, you know, hunted him a couple times and never got on him. Well, it was a perfect morning. It's like November, you know, early November, you know, frost on the ground. I mean, it's perfect morning to be in a deer stand. And my wife hits a deer the night before with her car. She was a teacher at the time. I had to take her to work, so I wasn't able to get in the stand because she had to be there. And then by the time I got back, I just wasn't able to get back there early enough without spooking them. And everybody knows once you bump a big buck, the odds of killing them are pretty slim. So I'm sitting there, and I was going to go to work myself, go to my parents, and to my parents' shop there, and ended up going up to my bedroom. I'm getting a shower, so I take my clothes off. I'm in my underwear, walk downstairs. I'm going to start a pot of coffee, look out the back slider of my deck, and there he is walking across the field at 80 yards. So I run downstairs, grab my bow, grab my rangefinder, grab a little can call. By the time I get back upstairs, he's at the back of the property and goes in the woods. So I'm like bummed out, going, dang it, you know. I don't know what I would have done right off, but... So I come back upstairs. Well, actually, first I opened the slider, hit the can call a couple times, waited, and nothing happened. Go back upstairs. I'm going to get in the shower. I look out over my back window, and it faces out over the field. And I see him going across the field, turns, coming right back at the house. So I run back downstairs, grab my bow, sitting on the kitchen counter, and open my slider up a little bit, and sitting there. And I got a little deck out there with a couple little stairs, and I'm watching this deer, and he's coming to me, and I knew once he got to a certain point, he could only go one way, which was going to be 50 yards, or he was going to go the other way, and I'd have about 35, you know, 36 yard shot, something like that. And he keeps coming and starts veering to one direction where I knew he was going to head to. So I step out on the deck, go down the stairs. I'm standing there. And mean, it's 25 degrees outside, you know. I'm standing there in the grass, you know, and he pops out into that hole, and I range the hole with my rangefinder 36 yards, and he pops out in there. I drop back, double lung him, runs about 50 yards, and piles up right in front of the neighbor's ground blind and his trail camera.
Yeah. Oh, boy, do we have...
That's not the biggest buck that I've killed, but it's probably one of the best stories.
One of the best stories. 25 degrees, people. You know, 25 degrees, most of us are still in a bed.
Yeah.
Not much in the boxers outside shooting deer with a bow.
Yeah.
Very cool, Jonathan. Well, thanks for taking a few minutes to be on Woods and Water, South Carolina. Looking forward to watching you on MLF this year.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Best of luck, and, man, we'll catch up again down the road somewhere.
We sure will.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, you've heard a little Huey Lewis in the news today.
Early in the morning, I'm sitting in bed.
Timeless music. Absolutely timeless. I'm sorry. Doing it all for my baby. Isn't that what us husbands do? We do it all for them. Don't answer that. Especially if you're in a room with your wife right now. Just let that one go. Forget I ever said anything about it. Start singing in a minute. You really don't want that to happen. I promise you don't want that to happen. Okay. I hope you enjoyed the, thank you, Mr. Engineer. Appreciate that, levity there. Vanna, pretty cool kid. I hope you enjoyed the deer hunting story. It's one thing to shoot him in the South when you might be in your shorts at, you know, 50, 60 degrees. Another thing to do it when it's 25. Yeah. A little chilly. Of course, the Michigan people, they're like that. They can handle it cold weather. We can't. Okay. Time to do the calendar of events for this week. And this is just some place to start. And it's all over the place this year, this week. We got a little bit of everything. But it's always brought to you by Visit Anderson and Green Pine Landing Event Center. And of course, we're going to start off with the foodie. Yeah. It is a month with R, you know, November. You know what R means, right? The oysters, okay? Oysters in South Carolina are in season. So, Hilton Head Oyster Festival, Friday and Saturday, November the 9th and 10th. So, Friday night, 5 to 8, all-you-can-eat steamed local oysters, low-country boil, pulled pork, seafood chowder, and chili. Yeah. Sign me up. Held at the Shelter Cove Pavilion there in Hilton Head. Live music, football viewing area, wine. Well, limited availability. Long sleeve event t-shirts will be for sale. Hey, it's $35 if you're an adult, $20 if you're 17 and under. Food provided by Roy's Place Catering, and they're going to have your beverages there separately. The nicest guys in the world are going to be on stage. I'm sure they think that of themselves. That is Saturday, 11 to 5, steamed, fried, stewed oysters, along with delicious food for the non-oyster eater. Live entertainment, kids zone, some local artisan shops. Marshmallow roasting, and a sports lounge for those who don't want to miss their fall football game. Again, this is the Hilton Head Oyster Festival. It just kind of makes you want to make the drive to Hilton Head. It's going to benefit the Carmine's Family Recreation Scholarship Fund at the Hilton Head Island Recreation Center. So, I think this is an Eventbrite thing. A lot of these things are going to Eventbrite. I've noticed that clicking a lot of these things. One footnote, no pets. Leave those at home. Let's see. If you're around Greenville this Thursday, November the 8th, the Greenville High School and Christ Church DU Dinner Banquet is taking place. It's always a really good one, and these are high school kids who organize and put on this thing from these two schools, so it's a good one. I don't have many details about it, but I know it's here in Greenville. I'll tell you what, we'll just Greenville. Bear with me a second. I'm sure you've never done this before, have you? told however many people are out there listening on radio. Hold on a second. It's got Greenville, South Carolina. Why did I put in North Carolina? Y'all just hang with me for a second because this is good. I've talked to a lot of people who talk about this one. Here it is right here. That these are high school kids. Okay, yeah. November the 8th, Thursday of 2018, 6 to 10, St. George Greek Orthodox Church on Academy Street here in Greenville, South Carolina. Tickets are student tickets, $35, regular admission is $50. And, of course, they're going to have all the other stuff. But doors will open at 6, dinner at 7:30. The country's followed by the country's best auction is what they're saying here. Limited edition DU guns, guided fishing trips, an Argentina dove hunt, and a Costa Rica dream vacation for $8. As well as some of the country's most sought-after DU artwork. Plenty of raffles, games, and this is the high school DU function here in Greenville. Hope you'll turn out and be a part of it. And if you're into the more DU stuff, this is probably the best one in the state that I know of. It's Shuckin' on the Yorktown. The East Cooper Ducks Unlimited chapter is hosting their 5th annual oyster roast held on the flight deck of the aircraft carrier Yorktown on Saturday, November 17th. Enjoy the finest local oysters on the flight deck from 5:30 to 7, local oysters being the key there. Those things will probably come out of Lighthouse Creek or somewhere. But anyway, enjoy. Then feast on a top-shelf low-country cookout on the hangar deck from 5:30 to 7:30. Ticket also includes cocktails all evening, live music, and your annual DU membership. As always, the East Cooper Ducks Unlimited will host the finest live auction and silent auctions in North America. We've got two competing chapters in the state that say they got the best in the country. So, November 17th, on the deck of the Yorktown is another one. And I'm trying to do this a little bit in the calendar this year and incorporate a little something other than just what's going on. And so, top three easy fall hikes. For some, the fall season means cuddling in a blanket with a hot cup of coffee while enjoying the cool, crisp mornings the season brings. For others, it means time to dust off the boots, put on a fleece, and hit the trail. Yes, because it's the leaf season. It's time to go. So they run through just a couple. Station Cove Falls Trail at Oconee Station Historic Site, a hike with history, a couple of winding roads of scenic Highway 11 in South Carolina gets you to Oconee Station State Historic Site. It's a military compound, used to be, and it's one of those easy ones to hit. It's a half-mile hike to the Station Cove Falls. So, easy, short, and it's pet-friendly. Lake Placid Trail at Paris Mountain State Park, so nice you'll hike it twice. It's a gem of the city dwellers here in Greenville, and just outside the bustling city is a quiet three-quarter-mile hike looping around the tree-lined Lake Placid. And then the Sand Hills Trail at Sesquicentennial State Park, in Columbia, hard to pronounce, easy to get there. It's a 2-mile trek, loops around Sesquicentennial Lake. Ugh. So it's a great spot for family treat. So there you go. A couple of foodie things, some hikes for you to take now the leaf season is here in the cool weather. And for you deer hunters, I'm there with you. Hang in there. Season will get better. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you have a great week. I'll be back next week with more Woods and Water, South Carolina. Make time to get out there. Take the back roads when you can. Don't forget the camera. See you back here next week with more Woods and Water, South Carolina. Can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like